Hello and welcome to this podcast from RT Radio 1 of Seascapes, presented and produced by Marcus Connaughton. You can email seascapes@rte.ie. Hello and welcome aboard Seascapes, the maritime programme. This week we talk to sailor, author and illustrator Pete Hogan about his recently published The Log of the Molly Bee. Stay tuned and you can win copies of Pete's book, courtesy of the Liffey Press. The Port of Cork invite 5th-class primary school students and their teachers to enter their gathering contest on the maritime heritage of Cork Harbour. And on Seascapes, we celebrate the work of the Irish Whale and Dolphin Group. First, we head to the Western Seaboard and to Galway, where we can hear from Colin Becker about activities on our inland waterways.
January is normally a fairly quiet time of year on the water, but there's still quite a bit of activity. For example, in recent months, the association has embarked on a new project to generate detailed electronic charts for the various inland navigations. The idea is to produce inexpensive electronic charts that are platform independent. In other words, that you won't need to buy a specific manufacturer's chart plotter to use them. And indeed, the idea is that the charts will run on laptops, notepads, smartphones and so on. Most modern versions of those gadgets already have GPS receivers built in, and even if they don't, external GPS receivers are easy to get and relatively cheap. The actual survey work is being done by volunteers from IWAI using GPS receivers and depth sounders fitted to their boats, and all the data is being pulled together by a team of people with expertise in that kind of work. A lot of care is being taken to ensure the integrity of the data, and pretty exacting standards are required of the people doing the survey work. Work is going on simultaneously on various parts of the navigation, and prototype charts have already been produced for a number of sections. The team have already uncovered a number of snags and obstructions that were previously unknown, and these have been accurately recorded. Details of how the charts will be released for general use are still being discussed, but you can see some of the initial work on our website. You may recall that I mentioned in previous reports that there had been problems for boats transiting the Royal Canal because of water supply issues. Well, just before Christmas, we got word that Westmeath County Council had obtained approval to extract water from Loch Ennell to supply the canal. Back in the 1980s, just when restoration work on the Royal was getting into its stride, Westmeath County Council went looking for an additional water supply for the town of Mullingar, and they wanted to use Loch Ool, a couple of miles from the town. But the Royal Canal had rights to the water from Loch Ool, going back to the time the canal was built, and so an agreement was reached that when the canal was restored, the County Council would source an alternate supply for the canal from Loch Ennell. This process was put in train a few years ago, and when it was clear that the canal would reopen, and now that the planning application has worked its way through all the usual channels, work can begin on the project. We understand that the Council will be going out to tender for the works shortly, and it's hoped that the new supply will be in place for the 2014 season. Once the works are completed, they'll be handed over to Waterways Ireland to operate and maintain as part of their normal responsibilities. As usual, if you'd like further information about any of those topics or about our waterways in general, you can call me, Colin Becker, on our low-call number, 1890-924-991. And of course, there's further details on our website, www.iwai.ie. And that's all from the Inland Waterways until next time here on Seascapes.
The people of Clare, Kerry and Limerick are being invited to attend one of a series of public consultations on a major strategic plan for the future development and management of marine-related industry and tourism in the Shannon Estuary. Public consultations will take place at the offices of Kilrush Town Council in County Clare on Monday the 28th of January, Tarbert Community Centre in County Kerry on Tuesday the 29th, and Foynes Community Centre in Limerick on Wednesday the 30th of January. All times are between 4:30pm and 8:30pm. The events will feature presentations on the contents of the draft plan, while members of the public will also be able to discuss the plan with local authority officials and representatives of the appointed consultants, RPS Consulting Engineers. For more on the draft Strategic Integrated Framework Plan, the SIFP, for the Shannon Estuary, you can visit this website, Shannon Estuary, SIFP.ie. To coincide with the public consultation process, an amateur photography competition has also been launched. Two categories, adult and under 18s. Photographs submitted can feature any aspect of the estuary, including people, places, biodiversity, work and recreation activities. Further details are available from that website, www.shannonestuarysifp.ie, and you can find more details on the Seascapes webpage. Next here on Seascapes, to a man who has captured the tale of a remarkable voyage on the world's oceans. Within the pages of The Log of the Molly Bee, which is published by the Liffey Press. The Molly Bee was a Tahiti ketch assembled and built by the author in Vancouver, and he is Pete Hogan, a sailor and an illustrator. Pete told Seascapes about his interest in sailing at his seaside home in Dublin.
It's in the family, so I've been sailing out of Dunleary since I can remember, in Mermaids, then in Dragons, and then in small cruising boats. And I did a lot of early racing, early offshore racing. I wanted to do the Fastnet and never did. And then I really wanted to own my own boat, and that's what resulted in me building the Molly Bee. Well, the Tahiti ketch is a story in itself. It's a very famous, iconic American design by a fellow called Hanna, who designed her in the 1930s and sold the design to a do-it-yourself magazine called Mechanics Illustrated. And because of that, the plans were very freely available, and many of them have been built over the years. And so the word Tahiti ketch has become a bit generic, in that a lot of boats are called Tahiti ketches, and people have messed around with the design, and some of them are nightmares, and others are nice little double-ended cruising boats. All of them are very slow, especially if they're gaff-rigged, as Hannah designed the boat. The gaff-rig, I wouldn't recommend it to anyone, but Hannah had a penchant for the gaff rig, and in fact all his designs, he's quite a well-known American designer, all his designs are very similar, they're just smaller or bigger, very heavy boats, almost motor sailors. They're based on Greek double-enders, if you really want to get technical, not the Norwegian type, but any double-ender really will be roughly similar, you know. A double-ender designs itself really when you get into it. They're sort of symmetrical in both directions. I found this hull in a backyard in Vancouver, and I bought it and worked on it for very almost full time for about a year, and then I got a little fed up with the project and took a further 2 or 3 years to finish it so that I could launch it. And during that time, I worked for a boat builder in Vancouver, a fellow called Don Martin, who's still quite well known in the Pacific Northwest. And in fact, he's designed the famous Martin sailing boat, which is used for disabled sailing. You might have, in fact, I heard of it on Seascapes. And he's designed other small yachts. And I got a lot of help from him and from friends in Vancouver. And along the way, of course, particularly when I got into trouble, which was frequently, I got help. And when I set off to sail around the world, I got a lot of help. So,
now, The Log of the Molly Bee, it benefits from the wonderful illustrations that you have throughout the book. And you lead a number of lives, one certainly as an artist and illustrator. Was the book a long time in genesis, as it were?
It was. The Molly Bee lasted from about 1980 to about 1995. And shortly thereafter, I wrote the book, and it sat in a bottom drawer for about 15 years until I found a publisher last year and did a lot of the illustrations, and it arrived on the bookshelves. But yes, the present Log of the Molly Bee is an edited version of a book I wrote 15 years ago. I cut a lot out, tried to make it more accessible to ordinary readers as opposed to anoraks like myself. the illustrations, I think they benefit from the sort of technology that is now available for printing. It's got over 100 color illustrations. They're all chronologically scattered through the book, which is a difficult thing to do, or it's just an expensive thing to do. But David David Givens of the Liffey Press has made a beautiful job of it. Lovely. He did the design, and I'm very happy with the book, and it's a lovely object. The two big things that have changed yachting and sailing and cruising are the development of GPS and the whole communications revolution. You know, you can send emails from the middle of the Pacific, and you know exactly where you are in the middle of the Pacific. You could aim for a tiny atoll from leaving San Francisco, and you could expect to arrive there. You couldn't do that in the old days. You had to be very careful about where you navigated to when you were using Celestial. That's why these routes are very common. They always they were designed to suit the sort of inaccurate Celestial navigation. And so my first long voyage from Vancouver to Ireland was entirely under the use of Celestial navigation. I wasn't a great Celestial navigator, certainly not in the tradition of Hiscock or Chichester, but I got there in the end. It's a wonderful thing to have done, but I don't think anybody... It's actually more expensive now to bother having a Celestial equipment and all the tables on board, whereas you can, for 100 euros, you could have a perfectly good GPS on board. The Panama Canal now, apparently it costs 2,000 to 3,000 euros to go through in a 30-foot boat. When I went through, it cost about $100, and 50 of those dollars were for actually having the boat measured. The Panama Canal, which is now run by the Panamanians, they've realized that it's a cash cow, and that's just the way the world is. We're a happy family, I suppose, and it is a nice record. I mean, that's why I wrote the book, to leave a record of what I did with the boat. The French canals, or any canals, the Shannon, the Panama Canal, I love canals, I love walking canals. I'd love to have done the Suez Canal because of their historic associations. The Canal du Midi, which features in the book, is a wonderful canal, dating back to 1600 sections of it. Beautiful, and it's still the same as it was in 1600. Actually, that's what I wanted to say about the Canal du Midi. Yes, you have to take your mask down, but we went through the Canal du Midi in the middle of winter, which was a wonderful experience that... totally alone, didn't meet a single other boat. If you do it in the summer, it's a big tourist location, apparently. So beware, you know, you'd have to queue up for locks. And if you're gregarious, I suppose it's okay. But if you're a bit of a loner like myself, it was wonderful to do it in the middle of winter. A lot of the locks on the first section of the Canal du Midi are automated. You arrive up and you pull a little string and the lock will open. But no, I've no complaints about the French lock organization. It's wonderful. Yes, sometimes they move a little slowly, but they move eventually. And it's no great... We were delayed a few times, but it was all a part of the adventure.
Now, you're very lucky. Your vivid description of the denouement of the poor Molly B is very graphic, but also the relief in your writing of Michaela not being aboard, and the fact that you'd had a tiff and she'd headed home and you'd headed off into the sunset.
We had a tiff and Michaela headed off, and I think it's probably the luckiest day of her life. Who can say what might have happened, but I think it is very lucky that she wasn't on board the boat when the boat sank, and when I get rolled through 360 degrees at least twice. I got so disoriented, I'm not quite sure. But she wasn't there, and I think it was lucky for her that she wasn't. I was lucky that any time the boat did capsize, I was down below. If you capsize in those conditions and you're on deck, your chances of survival are very slim. And we met up after all the dust had settled and we reconciled, and we now have two wonderful children and we're still together. Well, yes, I took my life raft, and I only spent 18 hours in it, but it was a long 18 hours, and at times it was very tight. The life raft flipped at one stage. I managed to right it and bail it out. It was very cold. I was sure I wasn't going to survive, mainly either through hypothermia or if the life raft had flipped a second time. But when the dawn came after a very difficult night, things were improving. And when the ship came along and stopped, things had improved that I probably would have kept going. I probably would have drifted to Africa. But this ship came along and picked me up and dropped me in Sardinia, of all places. A bit obsessed by boats, yes. I sail in Dunleary on the famous Glen class, and I also have a boat over in Ackle. And I love going down and wandering around marinas and fishing harbours and painting boats. So, yes, I still have an interest in boats. I don't think I'll be doing any more long-distance cruising in the foreseeable future. It's a very small world out there. You'd meet Irish people and boats flying the Irish flag all over the place, and they've all got a story. And it's surprising the number of them that you meet that one never hears about in Ireland. It might be Irish people who have set off from somewhere in the States or somewhere in South Africa. Both of those examples are in Australia. I met people who were sailing under the Irish flag and yet had never been to, their boat had never been to Ireland. Australia is, Australia, they're extremely bureaucratic and they're extremely strict on any type of indiscretion on the part of people who might try to emigrate to Australia. They wanted to know that I was a legitimate cruiser, and once they had established that, they welcomed me with open arms in Perth. Well, the Tasman Sea between Sydney, I went from Sydney to Auckland or Opua in the North Island of New Zealand. It's about 1,000 miles. It's famous for being quite a rough body of water, but people claim that their own body of water is always the roughest body of water, I find. So I didn't have any trouble crossing the Tasman Sea. Well, the Southern Ocean, obviously, it's because you're going so far south. To round the horn, you have to go down to 56 degrees south, and there's the possibility of ice, although I never saw ice. But I mean, we're almost as far north here in Ireland as they are south in Cape Horn. So the waters around Ireland are as good or as bad a testing ground for yachts as they are anywhere. Most memorable, yes, trip I suppose I ever, or voyage or passage that I ever embarked on was the trip around, the passage around Cape Horn. I'd have to damn the Mediterranean as the stretch of water that finally did me down. And the Mediterranean is quite a horrendous place in winter when these winds blow down from the mountains and kick up a short, steep sea. And I think that's what capsized the Molly B.
Pete Hogan, author of The Log of the Molly B, and the music we heard was Tenore de Oresi from Sardinia. Our question in our Seascapes competition for copies of The Log of the Molly B, courtesy of the Liffey Press, is, can you tell us the Canadian city in which the vessel was built? Answers on a postcard to Seascapes, RTE Radio 1, Father Matthew Street in Cork, or by email to seascapes@rte.ie. How wonderful to see the BBC Nature programme Winter Watch with wildlife cameraman Gordon Buchanan focus on the presence of humpback whales, fin whales and dolphins off our southern coast. They were talking to Padraic Hooley and had that iconic image by Simon Duggan taken of the breaching humpback whale off Baltimore. Just this past week, the Irish Whale and Dolphin Group research vessel Celtic Mist has been off the Wexford coast. You can find out more detail on the Irish Whale and Dolphin Group website, which is www.iwdg.ie. Speaking of television, try not to miss the wonderful new series that began last night and is on every Thursday at 9:30 on TG Cahir, Turas Hookere, all about Galway hookers. With all the recent coverage of the possibility of tons of spoil being dumped in Dublin Bay, many of those in the diving community are very concerned. Do you have a view? Then email seascapes@rte.ie or write to us at Seascapes, RTE Radio 1, Father Matthew Street in Cork. We'll be returning to this topic in the coming weeks. As one diver put it to Seascapes, divers' main worry is that up to 20% of this spoil is limestone dust, which is water soluble and will turn Dublin Bay into milk of magnesia. The Port of Cork has launched their schools initiative for 2013 and is calling on all fifth class primary school teachers to get their classes involved. This year's theme, The Gathering 2013, Cork Harbour, Ireland's maritime gateway to the world, is celebrating The Gathering and Cork Harbour's strong links with the Irish diaspora, both as a tourism hub and as a departure point for Irish emigrants in the past. The Port of Cork Schools Initiative aims to teach fifth-class primary school children about the rich history of Cork Harbour and its uses today as a natural harbour, commercial port, and leisure amenity, all participating fifth classes who take part in the Port of Cork Schools initiative will be treated to a boat trip around Cork Harbour, compliments of the Port of Cork, and each class will also receive a certificate of participation. In addition to the overall prize, awards will also be given for the best artwork piece and best photograph. The overall best project will receive a tour on board one of the many large cruise liners visiting Cork during this coming summer. The closing date for entries is the 29th of March. For more information on the school project and how to get involved, you can contact Sinead Kavanagh on 021-462-5375. That's Sinead Kavanagh on 021-462-5375 or email skavanagh@portofcork.ie. We'll have those details on the Seascapes webpage. There's a grand concert in the National Maritime Museum in Dún Laoghaire at 7:30 on Thursday next. Admission is €10 at the door for an evening of classical music favourites. On Seascapes next Friday night, we'll be hearing about our anglers with our monthly report from Inland Fisheries Ireland with Paul Burke. And the Australian Wooden Boat Festival in Hobart in Tasmania are to build a curragh next month. To coincide with Burns Night, we visited the village of Port Magee in South Kerry for their unique New Year celebrations, inspired by a Scottish crew aboard a French frigate that visited the village on New Year's Eve in 1727. All that and much, much more here on Seascapes. So until next Friday night, tight lines and fair sailing.